Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
The Late Show Poncho with Stephen Colbert.
Welcome back, everybody. My first guest tonight is an historian and the best-selling author of How to Be an Anti-Racist and Stamped from the Beginning. Please welcome Professor Ibram X. Kendi. Professor Kendi, thanks for being here.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be on the show.
Now, you're America's leading scholar on anti-racism. And your 2019 book, How to Be an Anti-Racist, is currently a number one nonfiction bestseller. What's the difference between being not racist and being anti-racist?
Well, historically, whenever people are challenged for saying and doing something that's racist, typically their response is, I'm not racist. No matter what they just said, no matter what they just did, by contrast, someone who is striving to be anti-racist is actually willing to admit the times in which they express racist ideas. They're willing to admit the times in which they sort of support racist policies because they're in a process of changing. They're changing themselves. They're seeking to change society. They're not necessarily in denial like many Americans who claim they're not racist.
Well, I like that framing of the conversation, because I, like I'm sure many of Americans, have examined their conscience, especially over the last 4 weeks, and said, I am a white American. I've benefited from our racist, systemic racism in our society, and I can't say honestly that I don't have any racism. But the reframe that you put it allows a hope for change.
Well, I mean, and humans have the capacity to change. And I think we have to allow for that. And the question is always, and I think with anything, when someone diagnoses us, when somebody explains that we have some sort of problem, the question I think for all of us is, are we going to deny that problem? Are we going to deny that addiction even? Or are we going to admit it and then begin the process of changing ourselves, healing ourselves, so that we can change and heal this country?
And another thing I like about the way you've done this is that, you know, while not a racist and anti-racist both might be described as an identity, anti-racist implies action.
Oh, it does. And really, I'm not racist is an identity, because typically a person believes that's who they are. And for somebody who's being anti-racist, it's more so what they're being, based on what they're saying and what they're doing. And so anti-racists know that if they're expressing that the racial groups are equals, they're being anti-racist. If they're challenging racist policies, they're being anti-racist. So you actually have to do something and be something in order to be anti-racist.
Can you be both racist and anti-racist at the same time? Because I'll give you an example. We hold these truths to be self-evident. All men are created equal. That is baldly an anti-racist statement written by a racist man.
And even that statement. So you had some people who at the time believed that we were all created equal, which was an anti-racist idea. But then they also believed, let's say, Black and even Native people became inferior on Earth. In other words, their cultures are inferior. They are inferior because of their environment. So we were all equal to begin with. But as a result of the cultures of Black people or even Native people, they're inferior right now.
I have a question about the history of racism. is what we think of as racism a modern, and I mean 500 years old, a modern European colonial idea that is merely a subset of inequality, or has there always been some form of racial discrimination?
So for a very long time, you can look into antiquity and see sexism and see ethnocentrism and see obvious religious persecution, but racism is a modern phenomenon. The concept of race, Black Africa, Native America, even white Europe, is a modern phenomenon that largely comes out of the slave trade, largely comes out of colonialism and slavery.
So why did that, if there have always been sort of like, you know, man's inhumanity to man, why did that, did the sort of the economic desire to exploit Africans lead to the justification of it through racism?
Exactly. And so, in other words, really the core, the heart, the cradle of racism is self-interest. In other words, I want to slave trade or enslave African people, even Native people. And so therefore, I'm going to create policies that make all these different ethnic groups one people worthy of enslavement. And then I'm going to argue that these people are inferior. They're savage people. So therefore, they should be enslaved. They should be driven from their land that I'm supposedly civilizing. So you see, the self-interest has led to the racist policies, and the racist policies have led to the racist ideas. And then people believe that these peoples were barbaric and savages, which then made them ignorant and hateful.
Well, we may not always have had racism as we perceive it, but humans have always had self-interest. How can we make it so that being anti-racist is in your self-interest?
One thing for the vast majority of Americans, being anti-racist or creating a more equitable society is actually in their self-interest. And I think that, for instance, white Americans are constantly thinking about what they would lose with a radical sort of renovation of this country, of this country's policies, as opposed to what they would gain. So they're too quick to compare themselves to people of color, as opposed to comparing themselves to what people in other Western democracies have. And then the question is, why don't we have paid family leave in the United States? Why don't everyone have access to free healthcare? Why is there so much income inequality? And one of the reasons you can point to is racism and people being constantly manipulated to sort of supporting policies and policymakers against their own self-interest by racist ideas.
And the cudgel of the welfare queen being used to destroy the idea of any sort of social safety net that sort of I saw, you know, growing up in the 1980s.
Exactly. And it was a social safety net that wasn't just helping Black women or Black people. It was helping all Americans who of course, at times are going to fall and need a safety net to catch them, to lift them back up. There was nothing wrong with that.
Now, you say that racist and anti-racist are not fixed identities. You got an amazing example of someone who's clearly steeped in racism, who has become an active anti-racist. Tell the story of the David Duke's godson.
Oh, yeah. A few years ago, I had the pleasure of meeting Derek Black. Derek Black is the son of Don Black. Don Black created the website Stormfront and was really one of the major sort of progenitors of the white nationalist movement and really groomed his son, Derek, to become like one of the leaders of the white nationalist movement, to really become like a Richard Spencer. But when Derek Black went to college, he started, some of his friends took him to the side and started challenging some of his ideas. And ultimately he began changing. I understand he read one of my books along the way and many other books on racism. And now he's someone who's striving to be anti-racist. So someone who was raised to lead the white nationalist movement is now striving to be anti-racist.
One of the changes going on right now, one of the cultural changes, like monuments being pulled down, perhaps changing the names of army bases that are named after Confederate generals. I have found out that your high school, you went to Stonewall Jackson High School in Virginia, and there is a petition, over 30,000 signatures, to rename that the Ibram X. Kendi High School. And I know this doesn't come from you, but this is happening. How did this come about, and how do you feel about that?
Well, I think, obviously, I'm happy that they're finally changing the name of my high school since it was named after a Confederate general. But I understand people are pushing for this, and one of the people who are pushing for it, I understand, is the great-great-grandson of Stonewall Jackson, who, you know, I think is really, you know, a class act, Warren Christian, and he's really showing that we are really not bound by our ancestors, just like we're not bound by the past history of this country's racism. We can create a different type of country that's going to really respect and value Black lives and the lives of people of color.
Now, you've also released another book called Anti-Racist Baby. Why did you decide to write a book about anti-racism for babies?
Well, I mean, I first and foremost have a very young daughter, and I wanted to have a tool for her. I mean, I know that at 6 months, the babies are already seeing race. I know at 2 years old, some children are already consuming or believing in racist ideas and discerning who to play with based on a kid's skin color. And I also know that many parents believe their kids are colorblind, but their kids are anything but, according to the studies. And we should be teaching our kids about racism and being anti-racist even before they can fully understand what that means. Just like we teach them what it means to be kind, what it means to love. These are sophisticated concepts, kindness and love, but we teach our kids early because we value being kind and loving, and we should value being anti-racist. And the earlier we teach our kids to be anti-racist, the better.
Now, as I said, you're a leading voice against racism in the United States. Your wife is an ER doctor at a children's hospital in D.C. She's fighting COVID on the front lines. What gives the two of you hope? Because you're both part of a present vital struggle.
Well, I think for us, I think what gives us hope is that you have to believe change is possible in order to bring it about. And so when she diagnoses a young child who has a serious illness, she believes that child can be healed. She has to believe it, right? Like, doctors have to believe that. Just like when I diagnose America as racist, when I say that even America has stage 4 metastatic racism, I still believe that America can fight against the odds and still heal itself.
Well, thank you so much for being here. Thanks for the message. Thanks for the hope. And thanks for the example.
Of course. Yeah, thank you so much.
More with Ibram X. Kendi after this.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Now you can feel like you're in the audience at the Ed Sullivan Theater with official Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise at ParamountShop.com. Shop t-shirts, mugs, accessories, and more, and Late Show Pod Show listeners can take 20% off with code TLS20. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show products with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com.
My next guest tonight is an historian and leading anti-racist scholar. He's just written 2 new books, How to Raise an Anti-Racist and Good Night Racism. Please welcome back to The Late Show, Ibram X. Kendi. First time we've seen each other in person, because the last time we talked was at the height of COVID, and it was almost 2 years ago this week, June 25th, 2020, and we were talking about how to be an anti-racist at the time, your book at the time, and also about the ongoing protests in the street following the death of George Floyd. So I want to get into how you see the United States and how you see progress 2 years later. But first, I want to talk about your new books. Here we go. This is a book for an adult called How to Raise an Anti-Racist, and a book for children called Goodnight Racism. Now, the nice thing is that the audio book of the children's book here is actually read by your daughter. Imani. What's that like? What's that like to, listen to your daughter reading your work?
I mean, it was just unspeakable. I mean, it was incredible, I think, especially because she had been actually doing speech therapy.
Oh, really?
And so to see her and to see her confidence and see how proud of herself that she was, I mean, it was just, I mean, it was nothing like it. Now, it almost didn't happen because her grandparents negotiated hard for her.
And, oh, she has representation.
Oh, you know, she definitely has representation.
Anything in her rider, like no red M&Ms or something like that?
So I literally have to put a gift under her pillow, like, every night now.
For how long?
She like was like eternity, but you know, I'm trying to figure out a way to stop it.
Depends on how long it stays on the bestseller list.
Exactly.
That's what it is. Well, okay, remind us, what is the difference between anti-racism as opposed to being just not racist?
Well, to be anti-racist is to recognize the racial groups as equals, is to challenge policies that are leading to inequity and injustice, and to really seek to deconstruct racism and create equity and justice for all.
So it's active as opposed to a passive response.
Exactly. Exactly.
4th of July is coming up, and we just celebrated Juneteenth, and I love my country, but I think the only way to really love your country or a person is to see them, sorry, it for who it is, yes. To look them in the face. You know, warts and all the beauty of that country and all the failings of that country at the same time. And you say it's vital that we teach the truth to our children, that we teach our kids about racism. Why do you think that's so essential? And at what age are you talking?
So it's never too early to start teaching our kids about race and racism. Indeed, one of the reasons why racist ideas are so dangerous is because they're so simple. Like, dark is bad. Mm-hmm. White is good. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why, by 3 years old, our kids can have an adult-like concept of race, according to scholars. They're already attaching skin color to who's good and who's bad. Mm-hmm. And so just like when we think about kindness, like we start early trying to teach our kids to be kind, so too should we start early teaching our kids to be anti-racist.
Well, one of the things you write about is, that makes sense to me. That makes sense to me. But even you say that you were reluctant to talk to your daughter about racism. What changed for you? What made you change your mind, other than, you know, all the racism?
Well, first, research. I mean, you know, I think the more that I researched this topic, the more that I realized that the very people who are the most vulnerable to racism are the very people who are the least likely to engage about it, our children. And so it's actually protective to engage them. It's protective for a child to learn there's nothing wrong with them because of the color of their skin, or there's nothing special about them because of the color of their skin. It's protective when our kids are crossing the streets of the world that we teach them to look both ways, to identify things that can hit them and harm them. And certainly these messages can hit them and harm them.
One of the arguments you hear in opposition to talking to young children or to teaching elementary level school children about racism or the history of racism in America, the argument goes something along the lines of, well, you're going to make white kids feel bad about being white. What is your response to that?
Well, I would say those people are most concerned about our teaching of slavery.
So let's just talk about slavery.
Sure.
If we teach white kids about slavery, we're going to teach them that there were white people who enslaved people and there were black people who were enslaved. And we're also going to teach them that there were white people and black people who challenged and fought against slavery. And so my question back to them would be, why can't we allow white children to identify with white abolitionists? And you know, and also it demonstrates to me that these folks recognize that kids are not colorblind and that how we shape the curriculum impacts our children. So then why aren't they concerned about how black kids feel when they're not represented in the curriculum?
I want to talk about another one of your books, which is Anti-Racist Baby, okay? And Ketanji Brown Jackson was sworn in today as the first black female Supreme Court justice. And your name came up earlier this year in the confirmation hearings for Justice Jackson, who was sworn in today. This is what happened. Ted Cruz talked to her about a curriculum of a school that she was on the board of that included in their library and some of their teachings some of your books, one of which being Anti-Racist Baby. What was it like seeing your work being used that way, sort of misused as a cudgel for political purposes in a Supreme Court confirmation hearing?
I think it was very difficult for me at first because I just didn't know what impact it would have on her actual confirmation. So the fact that
maybe you wouldn't want to do anything that could possibly hurt the chances.
Exactly, right? I mean, so the fact that that Justice Jackson was, of course, sworn in today, you know, is certainly, I'm just excited about it as everyone else, probably even more excited about because of what happened. But what I also thought about is that, like, literally, I suspect that Senator Cruz didn't read How to Be an Anti-Racist. It's a couple hundred pages.
I'm guessing holding this up is not one of the things you do to be an anti-racist.
No. And I would just hope, okay, if you're not going to read the adult book, can you at least read the children's book before you attack it?
When we spoke 2 years ago, you told me, quote, America has stage 4 metastatic racism, but I still believe that the American people can fight against the odds and still heal itself. Have you seen any progress since then? And what are you paying attention to particularly going forward?
So in certain ways, there are people, particularly at the local level, at the state level, who are building anti-racist organizations, who are pushing for equitable policies. They're largely behind the scenes of history. But on the other hand, you know, in the mainstream of history, you can make a case that things have even gotten worse. Because at least in 2020, we were discussing things like ensuring that everyone can vote easily. At least we were discussing imagining an America where nobody was killed by the police. But now we're not even talking about that, you know, at a national level. But behind the scenes, right, in local areas, people are organizing and people are fighting and people are striving to create an equitable and just world. And so that's what I'm looking for. And I'm constantly looking for, are we changing policy? Who's getting into positions of power? And are these policies and powerful people committed to equity and justice?
Well, thank you so much for being here. His books, How to Raise an Anti-Racist and Goodnight Racism, are on sale now. Thank you for listening to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to The Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar: Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar: Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey there, it's Michael Costa from The Daily Show on Comedy Central. Ever wonder what happens behind the scenes or want to catch some extended interviews? Well, now you can. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition podcast, for full episodes, extended content, and a whole lot more. The Daily Show, Ears Edition, is available wherever you get your podcasts.